This is the Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Last month, it's already last month, Bluefield's team of water experts presented its updated forecast in light of COVID, global economic uncertainty, a decline in industrial demand, and basically ongoing macroeconomic changes related to all of the above. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about why. So Bluefield's team's optimism, I guess at the start of the pandemic, as we've talked about, in fact, I've even put out a LinkedIn article, I think, on this. At the start of the pandemic has eroded over the last 6 months. I don't think anybody wants to feel that way, but it's really because of extended state quarantines, remaining high unemployment, and I'm going to say it, mercurial, if not incoherent, U.S. federal guidance from upstairs, if you will. So this prolonged uncertainty underlies what we are seeing as a 21% decline in municipal capital expenditures over the next 5 years in the U.S. alone. There are 188 other countries that Bluefield's looked at and forecasted that actually fare slightly better, with a combined 18% decline during the same period. There's a wide range of impacts across all of these countries that we've looked at. But separately, I guess at the top line, industrial water market forecast for OECD countries is expected to decline by almost 23% from 2019 to 2020 period. So that is another aspect of this that's impacting not only municipal utilities, their revenues, and so on and so forth. But the expectations in industrials are going to rebound more quickly than the municipal markets. So a number of Bluefield clients have asked questions about our assumptions about the historical recessionary data and really the dynamic macroeconomic inputs that we're using. So what I thought we would do today is I've brought in Aaron Bonnie Casey, research director at Bluefield, and Marielle Marchand, who's an analyst on the municipal water side of our research, and just talk about, one, hey, what about these positive indicators that we're seeing? We know that there are people looking at this and wondering, hey, is it all down or is it all up or both? So let's bring them in. So Aaron, what's going on?
Hi, Reese. How are you? I'm happy to be here today. I'm really excited about this discussion because I think it's going to be a really interesting kind of thought process to figure out what's going to be happening in the future.
Well, we've been getting hammered a little bit by clients saying, you know, are you kidding me? 21%? And not only that, 21%, but it's not this year, it's not next year, it's further out into the future. So it'll be interesting to go through that. I think you're exactly right. Happy is one way to put it. Marielle, what about you? How are things?
Things are good. Thanks. Glad to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Nice. All right. So let's cut to the chase. As I said, I mentioned some questions from clients, but Aaron, we've come across comments by industry pundits recently that there will be zero or no impact on municipal water in the U.S. specifically. Let me ask you this. Can you give me a reason why we should believe there should be zero impact?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the same articles that you have, Reese, and I was a little bit surprised that that's the discussion that's going on. But on the other hand, I can kind of see where they're coming from or kind of reading the tea leaves, how you would get to that answer. We have seen some fairly optimistic or good news data coming out. So I'll just go through a few things. The construction put in place data is pretty flat. And for those of you who don't spend all your days looking at data, the construction put in place data is put out by the Census Bureau monthly, and it tracks kind of a range of infrastructure segments. And so we particularly look at water supply and waste and sewage. Those are the ones that relate to our sector. And so when we look at those numbers year over year, they're actually up a little bit in August, which was the most recently reported month. Sewage and waste disposal was up 1.6% year over year. Water supply was actually up almost 20% year over year, which I will say, because this is survey data, we do see it's pretty spiky. So the 20% year over year is just, it's really talking about a single month number. So I'm not that surprised by it. But those are, you know, those are positive signs. The market is up. The other indicator that we've looked at that has seemed pretty robust this year is housing starts. So we saw this big decline in housing starts and building permit numbers in the spring when everything was locked down and essentially construction was halted and nobody could file new permits. But then they rebounded really quickly in May and June to the point that the first 6 months of the year was actually flat when you compare it to the first 6 months of 2019. So it seemed like the housing market was kind of humming along despite having these interruptions in the spring. If we're looking kind of bigger picture, the whole economy, unemployment improved from a high of around 14% earlier this year to somewhere between, 7 and 8% now, which is good news, although obviously 8% unemployment is much higher than we would like it to be. And of course, everybody is talking about the stock market, which has been up basically all year. It's doing great. We always like to keep in mind that that's not the economy. And a lot of those numbers driving the stock market up are thanks to Amazon, other big tech firms. So it's really a small sliver of the market that it kind of reflects the health of. But, all of those numbers are good news for the economy as a whole.
All right. Fantastic. So maybe we should just shut it down now and walk away happy as we started the conversation. So this tells me, based on our forecasts, is all of this a charade and that the municipal and industrial sectors, particularly in the U.S., should we just keep calm and carry on, as they say?
Yeah, I think despite those numbers being up, the conversations that we're having at Bluefield suggest otherwise, both internal conversations and conversations that we're having with people in the industry or municipal utilities as well. So let me talk a little bit about why we're seeing this potential downside. So when we look back at the last five recessions, there are significant declines in municipal water investment over the course of a recession. And I think we're all in agreement that this is looking like a recession. The question is kind of duration. When we see those capital expenditure declines, they typically are for hardware, equipment, and assets for treatment plants and pipe networks. But interestingly, it actually happens after the recession. They lag by 12 to 18 months from the start of the recession to when we see declines in the municipal sector. So it wouldn't be surprising to me that we don't see any declines in municipal CapEx to date, which is what, those construction put in place numbers, for example, would be reflecting, because we do see that lag compared to the rest of the economy. That was especially true in the last Great Recession. There was almost a 2 to 3 year lag in the impacts on the municipal sector. And then there was a very slow recovery from pre-recession levels. So I think that the sector as a whole, it's kind of slow to decline and also slow to recover. I do know, and we are well aware at Bluefield, that the last recession was different than this recession. This recession so far doesn't seem as bad. And when I say that, I'm looking at, current unemployment is not as bad as it was in the depths of the last recession. But I think the fear is that it's on track to be worse and that we have not yet felt the full potential impact. We're especially concerned because of the length of the crisis. So as this goes on, it transitions to being a short-term shock to more of a structural issue. And I think the discussion around city and state budgets for next year reflects that. We know that the water industry does not have a lot of spare cash on hand. So it will be impacted by cuts to city and state budgets. And if its customers are facing their own financial problems, both from businesses like restaurants that are shuttered or not open at full capacity, or from residents facing uncertain employment future and potentially not able to pay their water bills. I will add too that because of politics, it seems like emergency funding and long-awaited infrastructure stimulus in the U.S. is not going to happen this year. If it ever was in the cards for a 2020 bill, it no longer is. And because it's been pushed back now to after the election, the scale of any infrastructure spend is going to vary depending on who wins, not only the presidency, but also the Senate, assuming that the House stays with the Democrats. So, for now, we don't see any money coming out of the federal government in the next couple of months.
Honestly, I've been so busy this morning doing other things. I haven't even looked at the news today, but I think today is the day that Nancy Pelosi said either there's a deal today, if not, see you next year, basically. Might mean we're out of runway. So Marielle, let's bring you in. Aaron touched upon the big picture, sort of both sides of that equation. Do you have any data to refute the optimistic data? Anything else on housing starts, unemployment, anything else?
Yeah, I'd like to start by taking a step back and running through each of those items that Aaron mentioned up front. So they were unemployment, housing starts, and construction put in place. And why we might not want to be quite as optimistic as the current data suggests. So I'll start with unemployment. Unemployment has recovered, at least in part, because of the Paycheck Protection Program funds that came from the federal government. Employers were able to use these funds to keep people employed, even if they weren't able to run their businesses as normal. But that program has ended, and businesses who applied early on have run up on their deadlines to use those funds. As Aaron mentioned earlier around that emergency funding, the White House and Congress don't seem to be prioritizing injecting more capital into the economy. So it's likely that unemployment will increase again. In addition, when we looked at water sector employment in particular, it's also down. Utility employment is down 3.4% year over year, and construction employment in the water sector is down 0.2% year over year. Moving on to housing starts, that resurgence of housing starts that we saw when states reopened is partly tied to pent-up demand from when the economy basically shut down overnight in March. Because housing starts drive new development, which requires network connections and increased system capacity, new housing permits are a key input in our forecast model, and we do anticipate them to slow as employment rises. So to that point, the June and July comeback already appears to be short-lived. Housing permit numbers across the U.S. for August 2020 were down 4% compared to August 2019. So we'll be curious to see what September looks like when those numbers are released. And then finally, construction put in place numbers are based on survey data of what has been happening in recent months, as Aaron explained. So as we know, municipal projects take time to plan for. So it's likely that capital projects happening now were planned and budgeted for a while back, even years ago in some cases, and therefore were shielded from the budget impacts of declining tax revenues. And just speaking of revenue declines, another factor that we looked at for our forecast model was predicted state budget reductions. The hardest hit states are expecting declines of over 15% for the next fiscal year, which really calls attention to how these different data points we've been talking about will ultimately tie together to create that lagging CapEx expenditure decline.
Yeah, so yikes, let me put it that way. And this is all in a context of money's cheap right now. So I think the key is to what extent is that going to be leveraged for capital projects, not just water, but across the board. And I agree with you, you know, the construction that was happening before the pandemic started has resumed. And then it's not the projects that are currently happening, as you talked about, in construction put in place. It's the next ones. And is there going to be funding or financing available for those? So Aaron, one of the questions we talk a lot about at Bluefield, and we've sort of internally, I don't know if we've beaten the horse to death, but the big question is, actually all three of us, we're all based in Massachusetts, which is where we live. And so does that make us biased?
Well, yes and no. So I would say yes, because we all sit in Massachusetts and we see the world from the view out of our home offices, because we've been in lockdown longer and tighter than many other states. I'm sure some things reopened this summer, but there are still no big events happening. In Boston, where we are, the public schools are still doing remote learning, and they actually just pushed back the plan for a hybrid learning model reopening because of rampant COVID case numbers in the city and state. So it's really hard from a personal perspective to be sitting in a major city that's staring down the barrel of additional closures and say that the economy is on the way to recovery. That being said, I do think when we build our model and try and forecast what's going to happen across the United States, we try and be aware of the fact that not everywhere is experiencing the same lockdowns or the same pandemic that we are. And therefore, our model is built on concrete data on how closures are impacting various states. So one thing that Marielle and I have talked about a lot is how to account for differences across states and how this pandemic and recession are going to play out. And so we've played with a number of different variables, looking at unemployment by state, what are their budget reserves, what was the health of the economy at the start of 2020, in order to rank the states. And basically, when you look at all of those different factors and you rank every state based on those different inputs, you end up with different rankings depending on which ones you use, which I think was surprising for us at first, but it also speaks to this complicated ways in which the responses to this pandemic are interacting with underlying differences in the health of state economies or even individual utility or city budgets.
Yeah, I think one thing that sticks out, I remember going through those rankings and seeing what you guys have put together. The obvious ones that jumped out were Hawaii and Nevada. So you look at them and they're really tourist destinations, right? And they got hit really hard, really quickly. So it was pretty obvious. And I think it even, if I recall, it even shows up in their capital improvement plans. I don't know if you guys were going to bring this up, but you know, we did just put out a report on capital improvement plans for cities or municipalities that just released in the middle of the pandemic in July. Just part of it was to get an understanding or gauge how utilities were responding or what they were thinking as far as their budgets go. And it was varied, right? There were some that took a pretty steep cut across the board. Some remained flat, and there are others sort of were either business as usual or thought they were going to grow. But I think the other thing that we really haven't talked a lot about is I live over close to the Boston Garden, and you start thinking about, particularly in the cities, the larger cities that have sports teams and they have venues for events, there's a lot of money tied to that. And it's not just hot dog sales. We're talking about the taxes and the visitor revenue taxes that cities gain from all of these events. They're definitely not happening in Massachusetts, and they're pretty much not happening in a lot of other places other than maybe political rallies. So think city, you know, hotels, you know, how many people are the hotel capacity utilization is, God, it's got to be probably 20% right now. While I do see tourists around Boston, I don't think there's a whole lot of that happening. So when it's not open, the cities are suffering from all of these declines, and that's going to take a while to play out. So Aaron had mentioned the ranking. So Marielle, can you walk me through which states are poised for recovery? How are we looking at that?
Yeah, absolutely. We've actually been talking about this a lot here at Bluefield as we continue to refine our forecast model moving forward. So one of the things that we've really focused on while trying to answer that question is the strength of each state's economy before the recession to get at what we call the state's recovery potential. Our assumption is that those states that were strong before the downturn are likely to recover faster than those that weren't as well positioned going into it. The states that we see having a higher recovery potential are the ones that went into the recession with a higher GDP per capita in 2019, as well as higher GDP growth in 2019. So those states include Texas, California, and Massachusetts, among others. But just to reiterate, we really don't expect to see states moving into recovery in the near term. We're anticipating additional shutdowns, as Aaron mentioned, and for states to be more in a emergency management mode for at least another 6 to 12 months until there is widespread access to a vaccine. So the lagging CapEx declines that we're expecting to see, we really don't expect to see recovery beginning until 2025 in the U.S.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, actually, I have to speak later today for the National Association of Water Companies. I'm speaking on a panel, and it's about financing and navigating the future, essentially. And one of the questions that is coming out of this is not only recovery timing, but I'm not sure cities and municipalities even know yet, because part of it is, Marielle, you and I talked about this earlier today, and that's about demand destruction. And how is that impacting utility budgets? If everybody is working from their homes out in the suburbs, whereas I'm actually in the office today, and you walk through downtown Boston, it's a ghost town. but everybody is out being super productive out in places like Acton, where water, and it's been a dry summer. And so water demand and revenues for the small suburban utilities are up 15, 20, 25%, whereas in the major cities, they may be way down because commercial demand is down. I think the other thing that I think of those states that you mentioned, Marielle, Texas, California, and Massachusetts, I look at those and I also wonder, well, Texas and California are obviously big, but Texas has also been doubly hit, not only by the pandemic, but also by oil prices. They may get actually hit harder. I think going into the pandemic, they probably looked better than they were. And because, you know, a big part of their economy is energy, right? And the Permian Basin has been crushed for the second time in a decade. So it'll be interesting to see, one, how they recover and what they do about it. You know, California obviously has the scale. And I think the other difference of those three states that you mentioned, California and Massachusetts also locked down pretty quickly, not without their lumps in case counts and deaths. But it'll be interesting. You know, their economies rely on, you know, a multitude of different things, whether it be life sciences, technology, and such. So, well, let's get beyond the U.S. a little bit. Aaron, what about globally? Any thoughts on what's happening elsewhere?
Yeah. So timing wise, it looks pretty similar to the U.S. So we see a slight decline in the next year and then steeper declines in 2022 and 23. And that's related to that delayed decline that's related to pace of government spend, both at the country level and at the city level, where we see a lot of the municipal water and wastewater spend happening. I will say, when you're thinking globally, the differences that we've touched on across states become even more dramatic when we're talking about countries. So, you know, we talked about Hawaii and Nevada being tied to tourism and Texas being tied to oil. So when you start to look at the rest of the world, you get these differences in how economies are structured and what sectors they're relying on become even more pronounced. So we should keep in mind, for example, that China is already back in growth mode, but continental Europe is slowly trying to recover. The US, the UK, and Brazil are seemingly a little bit aimless in how they're going to manage their response to this pandemic and any kind of stimulus spend or economic growth going forward. So similarly to the way that we approached the US and the different states, our model accounts for pre-COVID economic robustness, projected economic impacts of shutdowns and the kind of health of various sectors, and demonstrated COVID management and kind of reopening plans. You know, I know that a lot of news agencies like WHO are reporting on case counts and public health statistics. We're really trying to understand what are the economic impacts. And I think that there is a debate to be had whether a tightly shut down economy that reduces its case counts, is that good for the economy in the long term or not? And I would say it's to be determined going forward. And so just like for the US, we're really looking at the data coming out over the next couple months to start to see what the trajectory for those recoveries are.
I think one thing that we really haven't talked about to add to that is it's the same globally as well as US, also just the politics of what's happening around the world. I mean, obviously the US and UK have taken, well, all three countries you mentioned, what am I talking about? US, UK, and Brazil, they have quote unquote populist type leadership. And so it's been a bit of a free for all as far as how to deal with this, also just getting your own PPE. So in the US, we've got an election coming up. Do you guys have any thoughts on, maybe I'm putting you on the spot, but what about infrastructure investment next year? Is there any potential for that based on what happens in the elections?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, they've been talking about infrastructure investment for, I don't know, decades now, at least every year for the past 4 years. And I think it seems that it has bipartisan support, but it also seems like nothing gets through Congress when the two houses are controlled by different parties. So I don't expect to see a lot of movement on that unless the two houses end up being controlled by the same party following these elections. And I think the Democrats have indicated that they're willing to spend more on infrastructure. So that would be, I think, the best case scenario when you're looking at the stimulus spend or just overall infrastructure plan spend.
Yeah, I mean, you were already starting to see deficit hawks come out. You hear the murmurings of, hey, we're already spending so much money. We already gave a huge tax cut last year that basically gave away money that would be really useful right now. But at the end of the day, at some point, we're going to have to invest in infrastructure. And I think, Marielle, maybe putting this back to you, when it comes to infrastructure investment or in lack of dollars, you spend a lot of time on the private water side of the equation. Any thoughts on if we're going to see more private investment in water?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why not. As we go through the annual filings that all the IOUs are mentioning, the amount of investment that they're making, I see a lot of announcements for water main replacement, repair. So especially there on the network infrastructure side of things.
It's interesting. Yeah, I think we did it. We've had a report, was it earlier this year or late last year, comparing leakage rates for private water utilities to the publics. And I think there was a lot of sort of breaking them down, you know, large public versus large private or IOUs. And the IOUs actually did show better numbers. But also M&A wise, I mean, aren't you seeing, when we were talking earlier, you were seeing more applications, you thought? That was your general sense reading the tea leaves?
Yeah, absolutely. There have been a lot of deal announcements this past quarter, and we're currently going through the state dockets right now. So it'll be interesting to see how many of those deals have been submitted and where they're happening, which companies are doing the buying.
And I think also there's growing interest. It's like lemmings, right? When you see some potentially big deals happening, there are utility acquisitions, but then on the service side of the equation, company, you know, there's been reports about Veolia North America's contract operations business being on the market. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because I think today we've talked a lot about CapEx and sort of the equipment side of the equation. The services side of the equation seems to be a different matter. Last question to you, Aaron, then we'll call it a day. But wouldn't you agree that we anticipate more positive results from the operation side of the businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen in past recessions is that the OPEX piece of it isn't really affected. And I think it kind of makes sense. There's not a lot of fat, as it were, to be trimmed from utility operating budgets. And so they do maintain, and any vendor that's working in OPEX is going to see less of an impact. On the other side, there is concern that the revenues are going to be impacted. And so if OPEX needs to be maintained and revenues are declining, that's part of what puts pressure on the CapEx side, as you start having to move money from potentially capital expenditures into your operational budgets in order to maintain those needed levels of spend.
Yeah, which I agree completely. So if your revenues are undercut by, could be moratoriums on shutdowns or shutoffs, but also just people's inability to pay for their water bills, commercial, industrial, or residential, that is more likely going to impact the smaller systems. And therefore, that's really the target. That's the sweet spot for the investor in utilities to date. That's really where a lot, and 60%+ of the acquisitions in any given year are for smaller systems. So our expectation is that that's going to pick up as well. But that's a whole different conversation we can talk about another day. So guys, thanks a million for stepping up, and I hope you guys be well and be safe, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Reese.
All right, this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. So now we're starting to get our sea legs. So give us a review of the podcast, or just pass it along. Tell your in-laws about it. How about that? Make them happy. See if they can go to sleep listening to water industry insights. But you can always learn more about Bluefield at bluefieldresearch.com. If you haven't gone there, we do give away some stuff. So it's at your fingertips. All you got to do is, you know, maybe put in an email address or a little bit more information. It's pretty straightforward. So thanks again for listening. We will talk again soon, and you will hear us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. I think we're on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are on hopefully Google, Amazon, and all the rest. So thanks again. Take care.